Let's start our interview and talk about Chafe 150 Grand Fondo. And as Mel, you said earlier, as we're sitting out in the hallway, that it's not just the bike, one bike ride. It's a whole plethora of bike rides from 150 all the way down to Family Fun. So, Chris, where should we start?
Yeah, let's get a little bit of history on the event first. It's been going on now for
many years. Yeah, many years. This will be our 17th annual ride. The first ride started in 2008, and so it's been a great long time community event. The ride was started by the Panhandle Alliance for Education, Chris, when both of us were on the board of directors there. And the Sandpoint Rotary Club took it over, I think, about 13 years ago. It's gained a lot of accolades. What we're really proud of, though, is in that time period, we've given over $1 million to educational programs at the Lake Pendere School District, scholarships, and some other youth activities that we do. So it's a big deal for us in our Rotary Club, and it's great for the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the CHAFE stands for Cycle Hard for Education.
Many people don't know that. Yeah. They hear CHAFE. That's kind of a weird name for a bike ride.
Appropriate on a couple levels.
Yeah, though. Exactly. Then we just start thinking about it. It works great.
If you're riding 80 miles or 150 miles, there might be some chafing involved.
That gravel 75, that'll get you.
Yeah, for sure. So this year's ride is June 14th. It's coming up. Still time to register, of course. Why don't you tell us about this multitude of rides that the CHAFE encompasses?
Yeah, we have a ride for basically every level of rider. So 150 miles in one day is a pretty challenging ride. You'd be surprised the number of people that do that ride without actually really training to do that ride.
Which is probably not the best idea. Which
isn't the best idea. I've been there myself 1 year doing that.
Same.
The 80-mile ride is the back half, basically, of the 150-mile ride. The 20 and 45-mile rides start... Well, let me back up here a little bit. The 150 and the 25 and the 40-mile rides start at City Beach Park. The 80-mile ride starts at Troy, Montana. So you have breakfast down at City Beach, your bus and your bikes are hauled over to Troy, and then you come back with the 150-mile riders. The gravel rides start in Clark Fork, and there are two of those, a 55-mile route and a 75-mile route. They go up into the mountains, come back down, go through Sally Valley, and then the longer route goes through a gravel portion up in the Sally Valley, and then they join back up. They all end up down at City Beach Park for a massive after-ride community event. And then the Family Fun Ride goes 2 miles up the Sand Creek path and back from City Beach. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. We have everything from rides for toddlers and up to our signature 150 route, which is not our most popular route. However, it is the one people travel the farthest for.
That's an elite rider, really, more or less.
As Mel said, there are people who come who to do that ride, maybe elite riders, but also people who are, you know, training to just do something real big for themselves and push themselves to kind of a different level, not necessarily elite. You know, they start at 5 in the morning. The course closes at 8. There will be riders who finish that ride in
7 hours or less.
And there will be people who finish that ride coming in just at 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think one of the beautiful things about the CHAFE, too, is in each of the rides, there's going to be those people who are coming in and really on that more elite level. But then there's also so many people who are using it as a way to, you know, they're fundraising to raise money for education. They're participating in their community, and they're not necessarily, you know, the person you'd think is going to go out and ride 150 miles, but they love it. That's the beauty of community.
Yeah, a couple examples of that 150-mile ride. For a couple of years, we had the Paralympic cycling gold medalist ride the ride. And 1 year... I had a bike accident the year before, and I couldn't really ride or train, and I rode the 150 that year with one of Chris's employees, Billy Jean, and Billy Jean had never ridden more than 100 miles only one time in her entire life. Mm-hmm. And so it took us well over 12 hours to finish that ride.
But you did it.
But we did it. And Billie Jean raised more money that year than anybody who has ever raised money for us. So it was an incredible event doing it with her.
Mm-hmm. I think training is an essential key for the 150. I know mm-hmm. that I can ride 10 miles in 1 hour, but that's it. So it would be a long, it wouldn't work for me. But some of these other rides make it possible for all levels of riders.
Susie, you might be surprised.
No, I'm done after an hour.
That 25-mile and 40-mile routes that we have are becoming increasingly popular as, you know, folks realize that, hey, you know, it's going to be a beautiful day. Let's go out with the family or grab a girlfriend and go ride the route. Those rides are sneaking up on taking over, you know, 40% of ridership between the two, which is very cool. Mm-hmm. Most of those riders are local. We see them picking up a registration the night before, and they're going to come just enjoy the day.
And those go into the Sully Valley, which is just gorgeous. So the ride is beautiful, and you have rest stops, right? That are kind of neat gathering places for the riders.
Go ahead, Mal.
And the rest stops, this is where the entire community comes in. Mm-hmm. You know, we have 7 full rest stops and a water stop, and there's even a rest stop on the Family Fun Ride. Those rest stops are run by different community organizations. In fact, KRFY has been running a rest stop out at the Northside Elementary School in Sully Valley for, I don't know, how many years?
Close to the beginning of Chafe's inception. Yeah.
Well, it's a clear picture that it takes a community, it takes a village
Absolutely.
To do something this big. This is huge. It probably started out small, but it's grown to be encompassing everyone's levels of ability and to participate. I love the Family Fun Ride. And so you have this whole community. And we were talking, Mel, before we started the interview here, that you have like 350 contacts, points of contact, tasks, whatever, in your committee that you have to manage.
Yeah. We have it takes over 100 individual people to accomplish all of the tasks leading up to and during the ride. Well over 100 individual people. But then, you know, Mel and our volunteer coordinator, Karen, they really break that down into, okay, you know, one person is not just doing one thing. So when you look at the list of stuff that it takes to put on the Chafe, it kind of blows your mind. That spreadsheet's huge.
And back to the rest stops, the Lake Pondere School District does 2 of our rest stops. Northwest Auto Body up in Bonner's Ferry does 1 of our rest stops for us. Catherine Larson for Idaho is doing a rest stop this year. And who am I forgetting?
Friends of Scotchman Speak and Pondere Peddlers also run some rest stops for us. They've been doing our gravel and our Clark Fork rest stop for many years. And then the hikers.
The Idaho Trails Association and the city of Pondere does the rest stop for the Family Fun Ride. So, and they're all doing this as volunteers. It's just an amazing community effort. I've lived a lot of places, and I don't think I've ever seen anybody come together like our community does for this.
Do you have a number of how many volunteers it really
It's approximately 150.
Okay. For all the rest stops and the coordination and your committees and the whole thing.
Yeah,
it's at least 150 with the rest stops. And Mariah, you might talk a little bit. I know we have a real emphasis. Safety's number one priority on this ride. You might kind of get into that for us.
So one thing that we pride ourselves with the Chafe, and the Chafe has always prided itself on, is, you know, we want to be the number one best supported ride that you've ever participated in, whether it's your first, you know, your first experience in a Gran Fondo, or you do three a year. We want to be the best one. We want you to feel the safest. We want you to feel the most supported. So we have, Mel mentioned, the rest stops. Those are very important. They're safety check-ins for our riders. You know, our rest stop volunteers are keeping an eye out. They're providing things that our riders need. We also have roving support and gear vehicles and medical teams and mechanical teams, all of those combined together in order to, you know, make sure that our riders have a touch point on the road when, you know, you need something, someone sees you and they'll stop and get you the help that you need. We have extensive safety protocols. We've learned a lot over the years, and I think every year you develop something new. And last year we had a really hard year. I don't know if any of you remember that, but we had a pretty significant weather event. And you know, you mentioned it takes a community, and it really took a community last year to help us ensure that everyone was safe. And we're really thankful for that. We ended up with the weather sagging, so taking riders off of the route about 10 times higher than normal rates.
Do you think that was due to the weather?
It was due to the weather. Yeah, mm-hmm. Cold and rain. More people wished to abandon the course, and we were able to mobilize our community to have people on standby to go get riders, and it really was an amazing community effort that came together to make that happen. And through that, we've even just further refined our protocols to have be more prepared. And every year, we're putting more in place to be more prepared so that we can continue to be that best supported ride you've ever been on.
Does each rider get kind of a picture of what the rules of the road are as far as riding on a highway, how to stay over on the side, don't ride three in a row, you know, across,
yeah,
something like that, because it's a partnership between the cars and the riders.
Absolutely.
For safety.
Yeah, and before the rides start, there is a safety announcement or speech that takes place. In fact, Mariah is key on that. Some other safety things we do that maybe most people wouldn't think about.
Yeah.
There is an emergency room doctor on the route. There's multiple other medical people on the route. One of the things since you've ridden last, Chris, I think, is we have changed the route. So some parts of the roads have very little shoulder, particularly coming into Clark Fork is an area of that, and coming back out of Clark Fork. We've redirected
Highway 200 section.
Yeah, on Highway 200 section. We've redirected the past 3 or 4 years onto side roads, and we've taken like 20 miles of where most people would have some concern about riding. I know you and I have talked about that. So that part of it has really gotten much, much better. So I would encourage riders who maybe haven't ridden for a few years to check out those new course changes on it.
That route runs now from basically Heron, Montana. You cross the river if you're coming towards Sandpoint, if you're on the 80 or the 150 ride. And you cross the river, and that's a gorgeous ride there from Heron to
Clark Fork.
Yeah.
And then once you get a little bit past Clark Fork, you're getting onto the old highway there where you go into—
By the Denton Slough.
Yeah. And you go into Hope. So you on both of those rides, you're on— really, you know, seldom used vehicle routes.
And we drove the route yesterday. I'm sorry, Mariah. We drove the route yesterday, and for the first time, knock on wood, there is no construction at all anywhere on the routes, which is a first for a long time.
No major road construction. It's amazing. We are finalizing some of the safety documents that the riders get, like you were asking, that talk about don't ride in a pace line. You can't wear headphones. You know, there are rules of the road that we have that we provide to our riders. And, you know, right above that is the list of construction zones on your route. And there aren't any. It's amazing.
Congratulations. That's good news.
Well, and another thing that we do from the community side and safety is with over 250 separate route miles, when you add all this together, there's some overlap, but 250 miles. And on large portions of that, sometimes there's not cell coverage. Okay, so we work with the local ham radio operator group, and we literally will have radio communication everywhere on, in the route, including up in the mountains. And that's another key safety thing that, you know, when you're put on a kind of ride like this, you go ride, you don't think about the fact that, wow, there may not be cell coverage. What do I do if there is?
Just a little anecdotal thing. Up in the Selkirk, or in the Monarchs for the gravel ride that you've got planned, riders are supposed to carry bear spray, is what I heard. But because you're way up there, off grid, off the road.
The Monarch grind.
Right.
Yeah, our gravel riders aren't quite that remote.
Okay.
We're on Forest Service roads.
For the 75-mile route, you leave Clark Fork and you go up Lightning Creek drainage, and then you come down Trestle Creek. Yeah. Probably pretty low chance of seeing a grizzly bear along that route.
More the cabinets than the monarchs.
But the thing about that is that ride has got 5,500 feet of elevation gain.
Correct.
So you got to be, that's one you better train for. I'd say of all these rides, the 25 and the 40, even the 80, you could probably do without a whole lot of training. But if you're going to ride the 150, you'd be well advised to do some training. And I'd say for this 75-mile route with a 5,500 feet of elevation gain, that's a good one to train for.
Even though that is a lot of elevation gain, it's over 30 miles roughly.
Yeah.
And so the percent grade is fairly reasonable if you're a bike rider. You know, the other thing, and I don't know how many people have gravel bikes that are e-bikes, but we do allow e-bikes on the ride. And there will be people in the 25, 40-mile route, the 80-mile route, and maybe even on the gravel. The 150, somebody's going to have an extra battery pack with them. But you can do it on an e-bike.
Can someone on an e-bike actually win the race?
There's no race.
Okay.
There's no winner.
It's a ride.
This is something that, you know, I've grown up with this ride. My father was one of the founders with Mel and Chris and everybody at the Panhandle Alliance for Education. And one of the things that he always drills into everybody, you get into a meeting about the Chafe and someone says race and you get that glare. It's not a race. It's a ride. We're bringing the community together. We do time it. So it's Grand Fondo style. So there are times. But no, there's no winner.
Most people are riding for their personal best.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. They're riding for their personal
best.
Rather than
riding against a competitor.
Right. But with an e-bike, you'd have somewhat of an advantage, right?
Oh, well, that doesn't count.
But that's
it's like using swim fins in the longboard swim.
Right.
You're not really...
We don't categorize the bicycle types. It's never been a concern. We work hard to take rider feedback and make adjustments where we can, and one of those is about timing. We do hear from people that they would like to see a winner sometimes, but the Chafe has never had that. And I don't see that changing. And so with that, we don't categorize the e-bikes. We try to ensure that everyone's in the correct category. So, you know, if you're registered for the 40-mile ride, but you decide not to do the addition and you do the 25, we try to recategorize you so that your time's in with the 25-mile riders and similar with the gravel 55 and 75. But beyond that... No, we don't like give you an asterisk if you're on an e-bike.
You know, our ride has really evolved over the years. The first 1 or 2 years of the ride, it was only 150 miles.
Yeah, and actually the first year it went the other direction.
Yeah,
it did.
Yeah.
It did.
You rode from, I think it started at the old Coldwater Creek campus there, and rode east. instead
of through Clark Fork initially.
Yeah. Yeah.
And over the years, you know, we added the 80.
And the 80 went backwards too.
Yep. And then we added the 2540 so that more people could participate versus, you know, training for 150 miles. And then we added e-bikes, and the trend in, you know, e-bikes allow people that have not ridden for maybe years to get back outdoors and get on a bicycle, and it's a great exercise, even though it may be an e-bike. You know, there's some purists that, you know, won't ride an e-bike. And then the last 3 years is we added the gravel routes. And, you know, my belief is, given the popularity of gravel riding and mountain bike riding, those may become our biggest rides in the future, along with the shorter routes that Mariah mentioned before.
They're certainly gaining significant traction. They were more popular. We had more riders on them in the first 2 years than we had kind of originally anticipated. So we beat our goals for gravel ridership in those first couple years. One other thing on safety that we had, you know, we go back and forth. We have so much that involves safety that you forget about things. And so Mel is a part of our kind of course and signs team. I am also a part of our course and signs team. And this team spends a collective, I don't know, 100 hours on signing the course and alerting drivers to cars. So we have large traffic signs on the sides of the roads that are, you know, alerting cars to the fact that there are cyclists on the road. We also do the directional marking for the riders themselves, but we use those big signs to alert cars. And we coordinate with the local police, sheriffs, highway patrol to ensure that everybody knows the ride's coming through. Some areas do additional emphasis patrol for aggressive driving.
Do you coordinate with Idaho Department of Roads and Bridges or whatever?
Yeah, we have to have a permit.
Permit.
So, so we have to have a permit. We have to have a bunch of permits, actually. So we have Sandpoint permits. We have Idaho Department of Transportation permits. We have Montana Department of Transportation permits. And we have a special permit that allows us to use the Forest Service roads. Yeah.
We have a police escort out of town at the start of the rides that start here in Sandpoint. And we also employ professional flaggers from a professional traffic management company as the riders are coming back into town to ensure that they safely get back to City Beach.
And that left-hand turn you were talking about, Chris, where we go off into Heron, that was a concern when you plan a bike ride. Nobody wants a left-hand turn. We try to make them all. Yeah, you got to cross traffic. So we're looking for all right-hand turns. But we really wanted to take riders on this frontage road. And so we worked with the Montana Department of Transportation, and we've actually lowered the speed limit on the mile outside of on both sides of that turn for drivers. So the speed limit's 25. Which really helps for the riders because it's a little bit of a difficult one to be able to see where the cars are coming from, and it makes that turn much, much safer.
Do you have a flagger at that point too, or just good signage?
Good signage. We worked for a long time to collaborate with Montana Department of Transportation that will to figure out what they would allow, and a traffic stoppage there wasn't possible. Within the law there, just to slow it down.
And alert the riders will be alerted ahead of time. There's a turn coming up. There will be a turn to the left to reroute through to Clark Fork.
Exactly. So they're alerted and they get a bus safety speech that also talks about that spot.
So is that frontage road between Heron and Clark Fork, the back side, is that all paved?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes, it is. And for years it wasn't. Yeah. And now it is paved. So it's just a fantastic ride. In fact, I think the Bull River portion of the ride is absolutely gorgeous. That section from Heron into Clark Fork, if you've ever driven it or if you haven't driven it, you should go out
and take your bike and ride it. It's really gorgeous.
It is... you really see the impact of when the ice dam broke and the whole area flooded to create the lake.
The old ice age floods.
Yeah.
If you want to ride Mariah's favorite ride if by landscape, and I'm biased because I spend a lot of time in the Bull River Valley, but the Chafe 80-mile route is my heart. I, you know, love the 150. I think it's beautiful. I think that the 80 captures the most beautiful portions of the ride with the Bull River Valley across Bull Lake. Some beautiful marsh areas that when the sun hits them, they're just golden and lit up. And then you go, you have that section in Heron. Then you're back. You get to Hope. You're going above the highway. You're along the water. Just really getting to see. You really get to see all of what you know, Western Montana and North Idaho have to offer. And yeah, that one's special to me.
On that 1 year when I was riding, I was doing the 150-mile ride, and I came through the Bull River Valley, and I'm just cranking away like crazy, trying to beat my personal best time. And there is a big moose in the water in that marshy area right beside me. And I'm like, it didn't get any better than that.
Yeah, we're putting together our safety and operations protocol, and we took some best practices national to work through our protocol. And you know, one of those pieces is wildlife encounters. And you know, they're talking about wildlife encounters, and we just say, you know, wildlife encounter, you start cheering. You know, obviously, if things get, you know, aggressive, we got to do things. But you'll see moose and maybe bears and.
Yeah, and they're not a threat.
Not a threat. It's the fun of the region.
Be very unusual.
Amazing. So we've got a picture of the rides, the different options, the spirit behind it, the beauty of our area that is provided for those riders that keeps them going and encourages them. The outreach to some of these elite riders, has the word gotten out that there's this ride out of Sandpoint, Idaho called the Chafe 150 Grand Fondo? And so they show up. What does that kind of outreach look like, and what are you bringing in from outside?
Man, where to start on that one?
It never ends.
Because I think there's a whole circuit of, there's a group of people that just circuit through to ride to ride.
There are, and, you know, where to start, I guess, is, you know, we have tremendous media partners with us, such as yourselves, Blue Sky Broadcasting, the Hagedon publications companies, Like Media. We have a social media program. We have an extensive email list. We're 17 years. We've had riders from probably almost every state in the country over that 17 years. We put up ride posters throughout the region and the area, but those ride posters are also in places like Florida and Arizona and Washington and Oregon
to and things like bike shops.
They're in bike shops. We received some accolades over the years. We were named a top 10 scenic ride in the country. Bicycling Magazine, which is arguably the premier road riding magazine of bicycles, rated us the number 3 charity ride in the country several years ago. Mm-hmm. So there is a there's a network. We're known. I'll give you an example. I walked into a bike shop down in Florida, and you know, I'd been there before, and I gave them a poster, and they knew about a ride. I spend quite a bit of time down in Tucson, including this year. And when you're riding down in Tucson, there's hundreds of miles of riding trails down there, and you will see our T-shirt or our jerseys out there from people. So we've really gained a lot of notoriety. We have a long ways to go. We're not the 10,000 rider ride like the Tour de Tucson, or not the 2-day ride between Seattle and Portland and all that. But for our size community and our rides, I think we're probably as well known as just about anybody.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah, we work hard on trying to reach out to different areas. And one thing I think a lot of people probably don't know about the Chafe is that more of our riders come from outside than in. That's not necessarily true on our shorter routes, but most of our 150 riders for sure, and a significant number of our 80 riders and some of our longer gravel riders are coming from all over the country. When I look at our registration, you know, it's oh, today's somebody from Florida. Today's somebody from Massachusetts. Today's somebody from Western Oregon. And it's fun to see where everyone is coming from. We sometimes get teams of people from different cities coming together to ride the ride. And it's pretty cool.
It brings a lot of excitement and interest and kind of a fuller spectrum to the whole thing.
Yeah.
But from where it started to where you are is quite astounding in what Mel said. This is the 17th year.
Yes.
Yeah, we've decided that's true.
17th year, and we've contributed over $1 million to education in this community. And I just think that number is staggering. And beyond contributing those dollars to education, the CHAFE is a huge economic driver. When we bring the ride in, we're working with the University of Idaho on an economic impact study for the CHAFE. But the initial numbers are pretty staggering, right? Because most of our people are coming from outside. They're renting hotel rooms or Airbnbs. They're eating at restaurants. They're shopping downtown. They're participating in our community, and we love that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that struck me on the preliminary numbers that we got for last year was the increase in sales tax and property taxes, because the total spending, as it rolls over in the community, generates about 4 to 5 extra people that are employed here and that are renting or owning homes and things.
That's full-time jobs. Beyond, we employ a sort of, we pay a ride coordinator, Megan Patterson, pennies on the dollar for her work. But beyond, that's kind of our only paid employee. But the economics of the ride generates what Mel was saying, 5 to 7 full-time jobs a year.
I just want to remind our listeners who maybe have just tuned in, we're here at the studio. This is 88.5 KRFY, our community radio station. This is the Wednesday morning show. I'm Susie Prez here with my co-host, Chris Bessler. And we're speaking with Mariah Williams and Mel Dick about the upcoming CHAFE 150, that's June 14th, and really learning a lot about the ride, the race. But I want to know a little bit more about kind of the reason for, and it's supported by the Rotary Club Sandpoint.
Yeah.
So all of that still we haven't talked about. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Chris?
So
where are we going?
Well, I'll tell you what, let's talk about a little bit more about the cause, which is education. And as you mentioned, over the lifespan of this this ride, not a race, it's generated more than $1 million to support our local schools. Is there a specific focus this year on the type of education support you're going to be, that riders would be contributing to?
Absolutely. So the ride has changed. The ride has kind of a headlining cause, as you would say. And this year, we've started a new headlining cause within the ride. And that is the Lake Pendere School District's Every Student Graduates a Reader program, which is a literacy program inside the Lake Pendere School District that spans
K through graduating seniors.
And they're identifying students who may have reading issues and helping to provide them with the services that they need to graduate literate. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. They came to a Rotary Club meeting when they were presenting this program. And the figures were staggering. The number of individuals who graduate from high school functionally illiterate. It blew my mind.
Not necessarily here, but
nationally. Yes. And so this program is aimed at ensuring that our Sandpoint graduates are graduating with a level of functional literacy that they can be successful in their lives, you know, interpersonally as well as economically successful.
So funding from the ride, the CHAFE 150, will help support the school district in guaranteeing that, assuring that every student graduates a literate reader.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible, but follow on what Mariah said, on a national base level, there's about 50 million adults that can't read at a level that would allow them to accurately and be able to fill out a job application.
That's 20% of graduating high school seniors nationally are functionally illiterate.
Sad indictment of education.
It really is.
And families as well. Families need to encourage and help their kids get educated.
What I guess we're so excited about getting involved with this program, and the next 2 years' rides after this ride, this will be a major cause that we're funding, is our school district here is probably the best, if not one of the best, in the state in terms of our reading test scores. Mm-hmm. So kids come in, they're tested when they start the school year at every grade level. They're tested throughout the year, and then they're tested at the end. And if they're behind where they need to be, they're going to get everything from individual support for someone that maybe has dyslexia and has a challenge reading to specialized reading classes. And when you combine that with the Ready for Kindergarten program that the Pan Am Alliance for Education works with, all kinds of other things like the reading dogs, Chris, that they have, and what we've done, and the Book Trust program.
Reading Buddies, yeah.
Reading Buddies, yeah. And the Book Trust program that the school district had in place for years. We're in the very kind of elite, and not only in the state, but in the country. And, I think our school just placed second, as I understand it, in the nation, in an academic contest for the entire nation. We placed second for the size of schools, and I believe it was 17th overall. So it kind of, for me, that kind of touches my heart. Growing up and going to a one-room country school and being the only kid in my class for 7 out of 8 years, it's great to see what we do here locally.
I have a new program I'm going to talk to Dr. Becky Myers about. It's called Grandparents to Students. And it's a team, it's an army of grandparents that go into the school, take a student in this maybe has been identified as needing a little extra support, and doing reading with them.
That's cool.
I know, it would be really fun.
Is that a program you just conceived yourself, or
just this moment?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and Dr. Meyer, the school is a Rotarian, so she's at Rotary most Wednesdays. So we'd have to have you coming.
Come today, superintendent have lunch. Of schools, in case folks
she's
don't know
great,
that.
Yeah. Very enthusiastic. We're fortunate.
Yeah, we get her in here periodically to catch us up on what's happening in the schools.
That's great.
Well, okay, so this ride raises money, and it raises money from the rider fees, but there's another component there, right? The riders are trying to incur donations?
Yeah, we have a couple different pathways of donations. The lead of our sponsorship team is sitting next to me, Mr. Meldick. So the riders, they pay their donation registration fees, and then each rider has a minimum donation threshold. So we ask that each rider raise or donate $60 in addition to their registration fees. Many donate more than that. And then our riders also have the opportunity to generate community fundraisers that they can raise money. And as they raise more, we have donated prizes from our sponsors so that they can get prizes, and the donations for those number in the thousands at this point, somewhere upwards of 3,000 to 5,000 our riders have themselves raised, which is very fun for us. The biggest piece of our fundraising really comes from the support of our sponsors, and I'll let Mel talk about that.
Yeah, it gets back to this whole community involvement. We currently have 120 sponsors, and you can sponsor from $250 up to $10,000. I want to just give out a shout out to some of our major sponsors. Lighthouse Foods, Like Media, and Timberline Helicopter are platinum sponsors, meaning, $10,000 of services, cash. We have several gold-level sponsors, which is $5,000. That's KPND, Bonner County Daily Bee, Kachava, the 219 Lounge, Williams and Schiller, Thomas and Sotheby's, Reed and Peg Tuttingham, and the Heimowitz Family Foundation. And then I could go on. We have about 30 sponsors plus at the $2,500 level and so forth. But it's been amazing. Many of our sponsors sponsor year after year. Every year we get some new sponsors.
And some of it's in kind.
And some of it's in kind. A lot of our media sponsors are in kind. Chris, your company is an in-kind sponsor and gives us a lot of publicity. Keoki mm-hmm. Company. Mm-hmm. So yeah, as sponsors, we couldn't really do some of the things we do financially with the ride without the sponsorships. Mm-hmm. And Megan mentioned before, we do have a paid person who helps us on a very part-time basis. She makes peanuts on the dollar, as you mentioned, maybe a couple bucks an hour, because she's really a volunteer in addition to helping us coordinate that. So everything else is done by our volunteers. Mm-hmm. There is mm-hmm. no cost. So yeah. When you're sponsoring us, you can rest assured that virtually $100, every dollar, 100% of what you're sponsoring us for goes to the causes. You can still sponsor by contacting me, and I'm going to give out my email address over the air here. It's melvindick@gmail.com, or you could send an email to...
You can go to our website. There's a contact form at chafe150.org, or you can email info@chafe150.org, and we can answer all your questions about anything. Also, a volunteer-run email inbox, so you'll hear from me. My email is already out and available, so if you just look up Mariah Williams, you can get my other email, too.
The best thing to do, go to chafe150.org, and... you can look at sponsoring, donating, and also get registered for the ride.
Let's get registered for the ride.
So how late up to the ride date can you register?
So online, you'll be able to register through midnight on the 11th. At midnight on the 11th, we take down online registration because I need some time to get the lists ready. And then starting on Friday at 3, we open our on-site registration and packet pickup. So it's the start of our big party. So at 3 p.m. at City Beach down in the former Trinity Lawn, we have a big white tent. You can come down there and you can register. You can register at 5 o'clock in the morning up until the ride starts on ride day. So depending which one you choose, you can register all the way up until the final moments there. But online registration will close Wednesday night.
And the Family Fun Ride is a little bit different because you're really trying to get little kids excited about bicycling. So that's free, right?
The Family Fun Ride is free for kids. We do ask that the adults pay a small fee. The chaperones mm-hmm. pay a small registration fee. One of the things I think that's really cool about the Family Fun Ride, we were just talking about this yesterday, and I wasn't aware of this. Maybe Mel was, but they've contracted someone to come in, and so we'll be providing free bike helmets and bike helmet fitting. So for kids who come to participate in the Family Fun Ride, they can get a bike helmet. There's going to be a safety check over of the bikes, helping kids, you know, get their bikes fit for their size. I think it's going to be a really fun event, just a way to bring people together down to the beach mm-hmm. to ride and
that's
enjoy.
For ages 12 and under.
12 and under are free?
Are free. And then a little bit older, 13 and over are...
Our $20 to register.
Bucks, yeah. So they start getting used to this idea, hey, we're contributing something here.
And it's really a neat collaboration between the Lighthouse YMCA, the City of Ponderay, and the Sandpoint Rotary Club. Mm-hmm. And the ride starts at 1 o'clock after the safety speech and getting fitted for helmets. If you mm-hmm. don't have a helmet, you get a helmet and you can take it with you. They're going to go up the bike path or the Sand Creek path. They're going to come back.
So does the Family Fun Ride start also at City Beach?
Family Fun Ride starts at City Beach under the same big starting banner as everybody else. So these kids...
With a police escort.
Well, with a police escort, they get escorted out for about a block, and then they come back. But the neat part about it is when they come back, The Lighthouse YMCA is going to have all kinds of games, face paintings, that type of thing. So, you know, the idea here is let's get kids used to riding bike. Let's make it a family event. And some of those kids are going to become our 150 riders of the future.
We've seen that actually already. So the Family Fun Ride's been going on. It didn't happen every year, but it had started a while back. We took a year off or so, but back at it. And we've seen those kids start riding the 25. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're definitely moving through the system. Mm-hmm. And we really just want to that bike safety, teaching kids about, you know, how to ride a bike, how to watch for cars, how to get a safe helmet fitting, and all of that is just super fun. And we want to have the families down at our big party at City Beach. That's a community-wide event. We invite everybody.
Hundreds of people.
Hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you have food and beverages.
We do.
For riders.
Food and a beer and wine garden for riders and volunteers, and other members of the community can buy a meal ticket or tickets for a beer or wine.
Yeah, so if you know somebody who's riding and you want to come celebrate at the beach with them, you can come in, you can buy your own meal ticket, get some beer and wine tickets, and enjoy the festivities too. And come buy some Chafe merch. I have new merch. Too. Surprising
what
new
kind of
merch.
What do you have for merchandise?
So what do we got? So we do special edition jerseys every year. And our special edition jerseys just arrived to my office a couple of days ago. I unboxed them. They're beautiful. We have long sleeve and short sleeve cycling jerseys this year, which long sleeve are they're a hot commodity. They sell quickly because we don't do them every year. So that'll be fun. We've got some new stuff. We have wool cycling socks that are super popular for biking and hiking and everyday life. And we just got some new ones. So different variety. We're bringing out a sweatshirt. We've never had like casual gear before. So we're trying it out. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm the one who picks out some of this merchandise. So I would really appreciate it if people would buy it so it would sell. I'm an accountant.
Yeah, you got a personal
stake in
this, Mariah.
I just do my best. If anyone wants to come run merch for the Chafe, you email info@chafe150.org.
And we have water bottles, T-shirts. Yes. We got some commemorative glasses.
We have this vintage merino wool jersey we bought that last year. It's expensive, but it is a vintage. That's a vintage style 100% merino wool cycling jersey that is just beautiful. They're made in New Zealand, and there aren't very many left. But we have a full size run in each size.
And you might think, why would you ride a bike in a wool jersey? And it's actually one of the most comfortable jerseys you can possibly wear. Mm-hmm. And I've got several of them. The old pros used to wear them all the time. So it's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well,
what else do you need us to know?
I was curious about the Rotary. I know the Rotary does great work in our community. Mm-hmm. And the Rotary's the lead sponsor, the host, so to speak, of this thing you've put together for 17 years, coming up here on the 14th, you've got another one. So just a blurb about the Rotary and kind of some of the work that then they support in our community.
Yeah, Rotary started well over 100 years ago in Chicago, and it was started by four different people that had different career paths. And we've grown to be an organization about 1.3 million worldwide. We do a lot of things around the world as an organization. We have a $2 billion foundation that our members have put money into and contribute. And locally, we have been here since, I think we're going on 57 or 58 years, if I remember right. We got about 100 members in our club locally. There's also a Pondere Rotary Club as well. There's clubs up in Bonners Ferry. There's three clubs down in Coeur d'Alene. And each club does different things. We get involved with an education project down in Mexico that our club helps sponsor. And we've done that for years. And that's everything from putting in computer labs for high schools to buying computers and things like that, training. Our emphasis locally is really on youth. And education is a big part of that. We do a really neat youth leadership program in the fall called Mini Ryla, and it takes about 30 plus students from the local high school, and including the alternative schools, and they go through a weekend long leadership program and leadership class with that. And then scholarships. Scholarships are a major. Rotary in the U.S. wide is probably one of the largest, if not the largest, grantor of scholarships after the government scholarships. Mm-hmm. Locally, last year we did $72,000 of scholarships to kids that were going on to either four-year kind of degrees or career technical education. In fact, career technical education scholarships have become actually bigger for us than the academic scholarships, and that's what the trend is right now. We host a golf tournament in the summertime to raise money to support those career technical education scholarships. Mm-hmm. So, very active club, been around for almost 60 years. I can't say enough, and it's service above self.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Mel. And one other thing that I think is very cool to point out about the Rotary Club is Rotary is one of the largest foreign exchange student host providers. So our club this coming year is hosting 3 foreign exchange students, and we are sending 3 Sandpoint students out into the world on foreign exchange. And that's a big push for our club. And if we bring it back to CHAFE, these other education programs and these things that we're putting together. So the CHAFE's primary beneficiary is that Lake Pend'Oreille School District. Every student graduates a reader. But the CHAFE also, in addition to the money needed for that program, provides $30,000 at least a year towards these other Rotary youth programs. So funding some of the scholarships that we do, funding the youth exchange programs, funding the Mini Ryla. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good work, you guys. Thank you to the Rotary Club for being here in our community, because you're making a difference. And then with the CHAFE 150, I don't want to use the word good luck. What would you say, Chris? Have a great ride, everyone.
Right on.
And
go to the website. That's chafe150.org, and you can get more information, and you can sign up as well.
And the weather next Saturday for the CHAFE.
So far out, yeah.
So far out. It's still a little far out, but the weather says, weather.com says Saturday the 14th, 75 degrees, partly to mostly sunny, high near 75. 12% chance of precipitation, southwest wind 6 miles per hour.
A little bit of rain doesn't hurt, actually.
A little bit of rain might cool you off.
You know, the year I had actually the best ride, the most fun ride, it poured on us for the first half of the ride. That was the 80, right?
Yep.
But it was just a gorgeous day. I don't know why that one was so much more fun that way.
One of our volunteers is in charge of monitoring the weather all the way up to the start of the ride.
Okay. Yeah. With radar. Well, thank you so much, Mariah Williams and Mel Dick. Very important people making this all happen. The CHAFE 150 Grand Fondo Bike Ride coming up June 14th. And the website again to go find out more?
CHAFE150.org.
There you go.